I'm keyboard, Brent Midland.
I'm drums, Mickey Hart.
I'm drums, Bill Kreutzmann.
I'm bass, Phil Lesh.
I'm rhythm guitar, Bob Weir.
I'm lead guitar, Jerry Garcia. Please welcome back to New York, the Grateful Dead.
And welcome back to the Deadology Podcast from Pencil Hill Studio, New Paltz, New York. I'm your host, Howard Weiner. As you probably could tell, most of you will know that intro. That's from Madison Square Garden, September 21st, 1982. A great intro to a great show. Grateful Dead played playing in the band into Crazy Fingers to open that night. And that will be one of the shows we cover here on Season 2, Episode 33 of the podcast. As I was kicking around which show to do for this, I thought about the Playing Fingers that they played on September 15th. I was at both shows, and I was trying to decide which show to go with, and it came out as a tie, so I did both shows. We'll get both of them in here. Both start with Playing Fingers, but they're such different, unique shows that it's worthwhile taking a look at both of them side by side. So let's start digging right away with Landover, which I believe, not looking at any stats here, was like the third show of the tour. It was the first one I went to on in that September 82. And just such a memorable show, probably the most distinctive, unique show I ever saw. Maybe not the hottest. I mean, this is up there as one of the most memorable. Definitely very hot and worthwhile. But just as far as unique things happening in the show, nothing like this show. It's one of a kind, definitely, in Grateful Dead history. So such a great time, man. I just want to take you back to 1982, what it was like for me. This Landover show is my 11th show. I had just made my first trip to the Midwest to see the Grateful Dead in Alpine Valley in August of 82, and was rewarded with sugary music to open the show, which blew my mind. Those were my two favorite songs. I had no idea they played that at the start of a show. Pretty rare. They did it a couple times, but that was it. And then the hottest Let It Grow ever, Great China Cat that night, just, you know, so memorable making that trip out to the Midwest. And at this time, you're going to see the Grateful Dead in 1982, you don't have the historical perspective, like we missed the golden days from 72 or 74 or anything like that. This was the best band in the world, and they were possible of playing the best show every night, and really felt like that in 1982. And there was no doubt we had this excitement, like we knew we were onto something historical, something brilliant in the moment. It's kind of like watching your favorite football team during a season and going to every game and taking it all in, winning the Super Bowl. I mean, that's kind of what it felt like being on some of these tours in the early 80s. You know, we didn't realize that it may not have been as good as another era, but we didn't care. Just the Grateful Dead rewarded us. And I definitely felt that way every time I took a road trip. So Alpine Valley, they rewarded me. First show of the tour here, ridiculous. Just the way the show started off blew my mind. So we leave from Nanuet. Doug's with me. Doug Schmell has been on the podcast a bunch of times. Probably had a couple other people with us backseat. And then we about an 8-hour trip, first time ever, obviously in Landover Cap Center, and we get into the show. They open up with Playing in the Band, and wow, it's such a great tune. I'm glad they didn't do it a lot. The disorientation to put you right into the moment of being at a Grateful Dead concert, opening with Playing in the Band, and it definitely blew my mind because, you know, we didn't have the tapes. We never heard of Playing in the Band open the show before. Still a pretty rare, very rare thing for Playing to open. But, you know, we're just out there like, we're like, wow, anything is possible. This is better than any period of the Grateful Dead ever. So Playing the Band rolls on. Nice jam. And just to keep it in perspective, the one from Madison Square Garden, much better Playing in the Band. One of the best you'll ever hear from this period.
But definitely Landover, more than good enough. A lot of great jam. And I think we go on for about 8-9 minutes here. And then they break into Crazy Fingers. And, you know, it was like some of these shows, man, they would just open up with things you could never have imagined. And it almost too much to even handle. It was incredibly exciting. I'm sure it was hooting and hollering out there. The reason there was the great excitement for Crazy Fingers, the Dead stopped playing Crazy Fingers in 1976, and they first brought it back in the summer of 82. Ventura, I believe, was the first show. Actually, I know that was the first one they brought back. Pretty cool version. We heard the rumor, but we were so excited to see our first Crazy Fingers, the first one on the East Coast in 6 years. And Jerry's, you know, singing a nice, great version. And especially the outro, like when they're finishing up here, they really get into the feel of the Crazy Fingers, a great jam. And then it goes back into playing in the band. But this is the first set. Stuff like this never happens any show, you know, in the first set. So they're already drifting back into their second playing jam after finishing Crazy Fingers. And then out of this playing, they go into Rooster. And as you probably know, I was a big Rooster fan back in 82. Jerry really nailed that solo. But just hearing that little jam together, the playing, the Crazy Fingers, the playing, and then going into the blues of Little Red Rooster, just such a unique piece of music. Actually, let's listen to that right now. So this is the end of Crazy Fingers, back into playing, into Little Red Rooster. Welcome to the weirdness, Landover, Maryland. A complete disorientation right from the get-go. Segway paradise, man. The Grateful Dead. Very unusual sound for 1982, which was a very crisp year for the Dead as far as performance. As 1983, they definitely got a little spacey, a little more jamming. But nothing like this Landover show, just coming out like that. And then they do the Rooster. Pretty hot Rooster, not anything that's going to change the world, not one of the best Roosters, but as always, the 1981-1982 Roosters, Jerry always nailed his solo pretty hot, and then it pretty much segues into the next song. There's no let up at this show, right into Dupree's Diamond Blues, and if I didn't think I was losing my mind at this point, it was almost too much to handle, man, just... Over the summer of 1982, towards the end in Veneta, late in August, I believe it was August 28th, the Dead played, they broke out Dupree's Diamond. They hadn't played it since April of 1978. And yeah, we also kind of heard of that. We knew that that might have been out there. So we were just out of our minds, thrilled, man, to hear Dupree's. First time for all this kind of stuff, playing to open, first fingers, the whole segue thing, amazing to see. And it was a nice, clean, fluid version of Dupree's. But by the way, if you like a great Dupree's, I think the best one I've ever heard is from Stanford, October 9th, 82. Check that Dupree's out. Great, great show overall. But awesome Dupree's. This one's pretty great. The guitar work, the singing, Jerry's voice is just beautiful in September of 82. I think it was like the last year where he really was, his voice was just angelic all year. And this is just one Deadhead's opinion, but for Crazy Fingers and Dupree's Diamond Blues, I'll take these 1982 versions over any year. The 69 Dupree's, these are all great, obviously. The 76 Crazy Fingers, for me, and all the years I would follow, these 1982s are just, for me, perfect renditions of the song. I love the way they sound. So we were just too much, it was crazy, man, being in Landover, just like, what's next? And eventually the set had to settle back into something that you'd recognize, a little foundation, so it got back to kind of being a first set after that great four song opening. Got Beat It Down the Line, awesome version of It Must Have Been the Roses, and of maybe of all the Grateful Dead songs. Whenever this comes on, I'm listening to a tape, listening to the Dead Station, I can't resist singing along. There's just something about It Must Have Been the Roses, such a great great tune from the pen of Robert Hunter. And the way Jerry sings this song, man, there's something about it, man. Beautiful, another beautiful version. So we're six songs into the show, if you're not counting the playing as a song. It's not a reprise, but it's a playing jam, but I wouldn't count that as a separate song. Then comes the... it's fine. I just mentioned playing because it's coming back, man. The in and out of consciousness effect of this show is mind-boggling. So after It Must Have Been the Roses... they just start jamming, and it's obviously like a playing jam. And you're just out in the audience like, this is amazing. What the hell is going on here? So they noodle on for a few minutes, and then they break into the what usually is the big set-closing showcase stopper for Bob Weir, Let It Grow. And man, what a sizzling version this is. Alpine Valley, about a month earlier, is my favorite of all time. But this is kind of cut from the same feel, same just electric, very, very crisp transitions. I think in 1983 and 1984, they played some longer versions of Let It Grow that were hot, but the band just didn't connect. And there's something about these 1982 versions. They found some kind of magic. And this Cap Center one, although it's not as insane as the one from Alpine Valley, this one is pretty damn good. I'm sure you'd be, if you've heard it, you know it's good, and I'm sure you wouldn't be disappointed if you take it in, especially with the playing intro, man, which is pretty cool the way they go into that. And unusual, Weir lets out a falsetto scream and at one point in this Let It Grow. Usually I don't catch that in this particular song, but Yep, you got the Let It Grow. And as I'm listening to the tape, I'm like, cool, ending to the first set. But then out of nowhere comes Day Job. It's always almost like shocking when you hear something after the end of Let It Grow to end the set, because you totally don't expect it. It catches me off guard every time I heard this tape, even the three times I heard it in preparation for the podcast. So this is Day Job. First time I ever heard Day Job. First time they played it, it was debuted in Veneta at the same show they did with Dupree's Diamond Blues. I had no idea what the song was, but, you know, listening to it now, it's an excellent version of Day Job. Instrumentally, they have this thing down to a T, and it's just ripping in a way that later versions wouldn't, man. There's something about this. If you listen to the tape, Garcia is just ripping that solo in the middle, and the band, at least on it instrumentally, seems very excited to do the song. And Day Job also had a double meaning for me because I had to drive back and go to my day job the next day. And I probably should have quit my day job, but eventually I did for Grateful Dead tour purposes. Pretty soon that day was coming. But Day Job to end the set, a great little additional song thrown on there. So just a brilliant, unexpected first set, unlike anything I'd ever seen, anything I'd ever see again. Just this Landover show was something else. They did three playing jams. Obviously, they opened with playing. You got the playing after the fingers, and you get the playing before the Let It Grow, and they weren't done with that motif. So they jump into the second set. Very cool shakedown. Shakedowns from 81, 82, usually very hot. This one's no exception. And what happens at the very end when they're about to go back into the final, they do go back into the final sing-along. Usually they do the chord finale at the end and then transition to something else. But this one, they just go back into a shakedown jam, just, you know, completely in vain with the anything goes of flow of the show here. So they go back into the shakedown jam after it should have been finished. And then comes the fourth playing jam of the show. Unbelievable. Unfortunately, it was the last one. They never went back and actually did the playing replies. But this is the fourth playing jam. And then it eventually segues into Sailor. So let's check this another unique piece of music. So let's check this one out. The end of Shakedown. Back into playing Lost Sailor.
Don't jump in this town, ain't got no heart. You just gotta poke around. Thank you.
Wow, I love that opening riff of The Lost Sailor. I could have heard the Grateful Dead play that for like 20 minutes straight without singing a lyric, man. Just something really mesmerizing about the sound of that great composition from Weir. And once again, this show. You take the other shows from this period. You got Portland, which they played a bunch of hot tunes. They did a Morning Dew on the 17th. I think they were in Boston on the 18th. A good show. We've listened to that a couple times. The Madison Square Garden shows. New Haven, very hot. Syracuse to close the tour out. But no show even approaches the weirdness and the free-spirited jamming of this one. That's obviously not saying it's the best of the tour, although it might be, but just such an outlier, so different than the rest of the tour. There was something going on this night. And so Sailor, obviously you're going to get Saint of Circumstance next, and it's one of the all-time best Saint of Circumstances. It's like that hot Garcia solo on this. And the crazy thing about Cap Center and Saint of Circumstance, they played the Cap Center 3 years in a row. And in my book, Deadology Volume 2, Saint of Circumstance is one of the jam anthems that I pointed out in that book. And I mentioned that all three versions from the Cap Center were among the best of all time. So the first one was August 31st, 1980. Awesome. And they were all placed in different parts of the show. That one came in the middle of the second set. On August 31st, 1980. The next year in the Cap Center was September 27th. They closed the first set, pretty unusual placement for Lost Sailor Saint, and probably the best of the three. Just unbelievable jamming. From the first time I heard that tape, I was just blown away. I think that was the first Cap Center tape I ever had. Not as good as the other shows, but for some reason, they're just... there's a memory, they're killing Saint of Circumstance in the Cap Center. And then this 1982 version, they just picked up right where they left off, just these extraordinary versions. And I think it goes to like a little theory I had. I brought it up with Sugary in Hartford, Grateful Dead are playing Sugary. They did an amazing, in 77 in the Hartford Civic Center. They did a great one in New Haven. Every time they came to Connecticut, They did a kick-ass Sugary. It was as if it was like a deja vu kind of thing they were playing, and maybe consciously or unconsciously, they're standing on the stage and they just felt the vibe of past Sugaries and came up with these unusually great versions every time. It was either consciously or could have been unconsciously in the moment as Garcia was playing, just thinking, "Hey man, wasn't I in this place doing a killer Sugary?" And I think that's what happened here with the Saint of Circumstance, because it's so unusual that they would have three such hot versions of Saint of Circumstance in consecutive years. That just they were each Saint of the Circumstance of the year, pretty much. They were that good. So great Saint of Circumstance, and they go pretty much go straight into drums, space. And it was kind of surprising to me that when they went into space, playing was done at this point. They'd come back for playing jams. You thought they might wind it up with the big reprise at the end or something, but playing was done, man. They didn't even noodle into it at all. So space, not Fade Away. And this, at the end of this, after drums, I didn't think too much of it at the time. Or it really didn't, but I'm listening to it again for the podcast. What an awesome Not Fade Away this is, especially for 1982. We're not going to compare it to the great 77 versions or, the earlier versions where they're going into Down the Road from 72. But awesome, pretty cool. They took their time getting into the Not Fade Away, building it up, long intro. These versions from 80, 81, 82, pretty cool. But this one, once again, kind of stood out. I was surprised at how good it was. And it was kind of, it's the end of an era here because in Madison Square Garden. 6 nights later, they would play Throwing Stones, Not Fade Away, and that was the end of Not Fade Away. Almost like Throwing Stones was the better song. Not Fade Away just became truncated and more of just a crowd pleaser than they actually working on a great art like they are at this performance. So this is one of the last great Not Fade Aways. I mean, they did have a couple, you know, here and there they played a hot Not Fade Aways coming out of that Throwing Stone, but nothing in compare to 81, 82, and especially in the 70s with the way they played Not Fade Away. So we got the Not Fade Away, and it rolls into one, right into Stella Blue. And once again, Jerry singing beautiful. And for some reason, maybe this is my 11th show, maybe I wasn't as much of a Stella Blue fan back then. Now, to me, it's one of the greatest songs of all time. Just something to really crave listening to. But I didn't even realize how hot it was. Like, this is the hottest Stella Blue I ever saw. But I didn't realize it that night. I think Doug Schmell pointed out to me, he's like, hey, that Landover Stella Blue, you got to check it out. And I was like, wow, the outro solo by Garcia is unbelievable here. So very hot, Stella Blue after Not Fade Away. And then they go for a nice typical ending, little kitty cookout, round and round, into Good Lovin'. But really good versions. You could just tell there's a good rocking vibe here towards the end of the show. And so many things I'd never seen before at this show. The crazy shakedown playing jam we'll never see again. And then from the first set, my first fingers, my first Dupree's, first time playing to open a show. It was just like nonstop, And there was one more first to go. It was also my first day job. Maybe not the most historic thing in the world, but. This was the Grateful Dead would actually debut a song for the first time in the encore slot. What would be their first hit song, Touch of Grey. So this, the encore of this show, Touch of Grey, obviously nobody knew it, but it's great listening to the audience on this tape because the audience is just totally into everything they're doing on this night. It was a smart audience, like when they heard the fingers, the extra roar, and the Dupree's. So even back in 82, even though we didn't have the information and all the set lists, at the ready for people knew what was going on, and the Grateful Dead crowd was a very intelligent and insane crowd. So I would definitely recommend listening to the Matrix Mix audience soundboard for this show. Pretty cool to hear the crowd reactions, but a good Touch of Grey to open. I thought the day job for the version came off a little better, but what could you expect? It's the first version, and just another feather in the cap of a great show on September 15th, 1982, Cap Center, Landover. And in one of the great driving feats of my Grateful Dead career, I drove straight home after the show from Landover to New York. There's many nights where I passed out right after the show and handed the wheel over, and my boys got me home. But this was one night I did the whole drive. I was just amped up from the show. And I just remember dropping Doug off, dropping my friends off, going back to my parents' house, not even sleeping. I put pancakes and sausage thing into the microwave, drank some black coffee, and was off to work the next morning at Ramapo Seafood, working in a seafood warehouse. I must have been helped by some certain substances that day to make it through. But yeah, it was so worth it, man. Those days, just whatever you had to do. If you had to stay up all night, drive all night, quit a job, go to work the next day after being up all, whatever it took. It was just such a thrill to discover America and hear this music, which we knew was the coolest thing in the moment. And we also knew it was historical because we were listening. We couldn't wait to get the tapes. We were listening with one ear on the future and getting the tapes. Great times. So my next show was the Madison Square Garden show. September 20th was the first night. Very good show. Great, awesome song selection. But I think some of the hottest playing of any set in this tour is the second night, September 21st. But the first set definitely is bigger than the second set. As the playing, there's some all-time great versions in the first set. So that's why I'm going to start with set two. And I'm not really going to go into it. I just quickly want to mention what they played. And so it's a well-played set, but everything's average. You know, the song selection's average. Playing's a little better than average, but just, yeah, there's nothing to really talk about here. So let me just read off the tunes for you. Touch Grey, Samson, High Time, Estimated, He's Gone, Drums. As I mentioned earlier, the first Throwing Stones, Not Fade Away, Black Peter, Good Lovin', U.S. Blues. And, you know, there's nothing bad to report, but, you know, listening to tape, I thought the Samson was pretty hot. But just, you could tell just by the Jerry songs, it's a pretty relaxed set. High Time, He's Gone, Black Peter. But the first set, wow. And I got some great highlights from the first set to play for you. So you get the great John Cher opening that we heard at the beginning of the podcast. Open up with Playing. And man, this playing is the best playing of the decade, in my opinion. It's about 10 minutes long, and just the whole band is just ripping, man, like it's 1972. I mean, it's that good. It's really unbelievable. One of the best openers ever for the Grateful Dead. I think if you listen to this and compare it to some of the 70, I think they played it twice in 72 in Europe. I think this is actually hotter than those versions to open the show. And yeah, so you get about 10 minutes in, Jerry's that easy flow, but to do this first song, to get deep into that, you know, Grateful Dead, just weirdness that he, very tough to do with the first song. It's probably why they didn't do Playing a lot. But on this night, they were just pumped. They're in Madison Square Garden. They got the great intro, and we're off and running. And the Crazy Fingers that follows is my all-time favorite. The intro into the Crazy Fingers is awesome. Brent's playing is great on this. You know, just unbelievable. It's a longer intro than the one from Landover. It's perfect. This supposed to have been about the fourth or fifth version they did since they brought it back. This is complete gold, man. Jerry's voice, the guitar solo. So yeah, let's check a little bit of that out. Once again, we haven't heard Jerry's voice from 82 yet on this podcast. So just listen to how good he is and the way he's singing Crazy Finger here. Shine inside.
Where we should go, we just ride. Gone are the broken eyes we saw through in dreams. Gone both dream and life. Oh.
the gold ring down inside. Never could reach it, just slips away, but I try.
Stone to their souls, Madison Square Garden takes in a magical, melancholy performance of Crazy Fingers, one of the most unique Grateful Dead songs ever to come from Hunter and Garcia, just unlike anything else, man. Great tune, and that's my favorite version of it. And the cool thing about this set, man, just more all-time great versions on the heels of this. So kind of in contrast to the Landover show, which was just brilliantly exciting, you know, like it felt like the carpet was being pulled out from underneath your feet. This Madison Square Garden, it's just the Grateful Dead are out for the kill. There's nothing psychedelic or you know, in and out of consciousness here. This is just the Grateful Dead pumping, rocking as hard as they can. Psyched for New York City, Madison Square Garden, and they just ripped through me and my uncle. They're on a mission to play one of the greatest Big Rivers you're ever going to hear. But also it's connected like it was in Landover. The Fingers went into me and my uncle, which I think gives the me and my uncle a little more pop, you know, just having the flow of coming out of Crazy Fingers. And the beneficiary of this all is Big River. So, me and Doug on some past podcasts talked about how much we love the 74 versions, and there's a couple of great ones from 77. But for me, whenever I hear Big River, this is the one I compare it to, September 21st, 1982. To me, since the day I heard this and I got the tape, this has been my favorite version. The honky-tonk piano playing from Brent is incredible. I think it inspires the whole band here. And then Jerry just goes off like seven rounds on and on, and the band is just screeching full speed. Nothing like this Big River. So let's get to some Big River listening here. Enjoy.
Thank you. Tall black weaving willow had a cry, cry, cry. Dark clouds had a cover of a clear blue sky. Tears dry for that woman, they're gonna flood you, big river. Yeah, I'm gonna sit right here till I die. I'm gonna sit right here till I die. I'm gonna sit right here till I die.
I believe Johnny Cash would have been smiling if he was in Madison Square Garden, September 21st, 1982, to hear the Grateful Dead perform one of his great tunes. I'd recently seen Bob Dylan do that in Memphis. He did a great job with it. Such a great Johnny Cash number, man. Just brilliant, brilliant songwriting. I think Dylan went off on just talking about how great a song Big River is. But hey, the Grateful Dead were on top of it. One of the first band to do a major cover of Big River and pull it into their shows. Bob Weir making it a mainstay of Grateful Dead shows for many years. And for me, that's the best. Just so much energy in that, blowing the roof off Madison Square Garden. And there's more to come in this first set, more great performances. West L.A. Fadeaway on the heels of that river. And West L.A. was part of the new tunes that would be on In the Dark. The Touch of Grey, Buckets, all those songs. Bucket hadn't come out yet, Throwing Stones. So this was my first time seeing West L.A. And right out of the bat, we all took, me and my friends took to West L.A. Fadeaway. That was like our favorite song from the In the Dark. And these early versions, as well as most of the versions through the year, are very hot. So this is one song they had together right away. Different lyrics on this Garden version. She plays by the golden rule, blah, blah, blah. So I forget off the top of my head what the different verses. But this is one worth checking out. Great West L.A. Fadeaway in the fifth spot. This tape... and the Glens Falls 1982 are two of the first sets that I listen to the most. I just keep going back to them every year. I can listen to them over and over. Incredible. So song six, Beat It Down the Line, good version. Very hot loser in the seventh spot. And going through these a little quick because I can't wait to get to number eight. Believe it or not, I'm going to rave about This Looks Like Rain. Now when I was seeing the Dead back in my early days, I loved Looks Like Rain. I thought it was a great tune. I don't know what it was. As time went on, maybe I just heard it too much, and I kind of lost my love for the song. I probably played too much. It's like when you're a kid and you hear Rock and Roll by Led Zeppelin 10,000 times, you can't take it anymore. And then one day you're listening to it on the classic rock station, you're like, Jesus Christ, what a great song this is. That's kind of the way my relationship with Looks Like Rain, even though I don't know if I go that far as to go nuts about it these days, but there's some amazing versions out there, and mostly the standout part is when Jerry is cooking behind Weir at the end. And we're going to play a little section for you right here. Weir's totally into it. Rain, rain, go away. Can't take no more fucking rain. He's cursing. He's got the falsetto screams going. He's totally on his game. But the stuff Jerry's doing here, just wow. It's some of the coolest playing you're ever going to hear. And it looks like rain. It's just not noodling. It's almost like it's a melodic thing he has going on here. Just, well, I can't even describe it. It's so good. Listen to this. Some of my favorite jamming in Looks Like Rain.
Rain, rain, go away. Can't take no more rain today, no. Go away. Thank you.
like rain and it feels like rain. Go away. Looks like rain and it feels like rain. No more rain today.
No, go away.
All my life I've seen rain and rain and rain and rain. And here comes some more rain. I said, all my life I've seen rain and rain and rain. Can't take no more fucking rain. Rain, rain, go away. No more rain, no more rain today. Rain, rain, go away. I say, ah! Looks like rain, feels like rain. Oh, Lord, here come the rain. Looks like rain, feels like rain. Oh, Lord, here come the rain. Looks like rain.
Man, Jerry lost and looks like rain noodling heaven, man. He could have went on for another 10 minutes just noodling behind Weir. And, I mean, Weir brought it, man. He had, like, definitely the energy on this night, man. So this is why I go back to this tape often. It's just there's so many just standout versions where, undeniably, the Grateful Dead are just on top of their game. Cocaine Crisp, 1982 Grateful Dead. And in the years of 83, 84, I may like 83 better than 82. There's long, probably because there's longer jamming, but the Dead are just so crisp in 1982, man. Just like great for official releases and turning people who aren't Deadheads yet onto the Grateful Dead. Awesome stuff in 82. This great first set ends, by the way, with China Cat Rider. How can you go wrong with that, man? A very good version. Usually the ones that end the first set aren't as hot as the ones that open set two with China Cat Rider. But the Grateful Dead, a year earlier in Madison Square Garden, played the best post-1974 China Cat Rider by far on March 9th, 1981. That was my first show. I was too much of a novice to even appreciate it back in the day at my first show, but what a great Cat Rider. And that kind of became a Madison Square Garden thing, playing great Cat Riders. They did an awesome one October 11th, 83 on St. Stephen night, the night they broke out St. Stephen. So a Cat Rider to close out. And it's no wonder I listen to this so much. If you hear that Big River, that Looks Like Rain, the beauty of the Crazy Fingers, man, just this is essential Grateful Dead on top of their game. They're about, 15 years into it, 17 years as a band, just incredible. And it was an amazing ride to be there in 1982. And I was about to step into my biggest touring year ever for both the Jerry Garcia Band and the Grateful Dead in 1983. But great memories. Thanks for listening to the podcast, taking in these awesome performances with me. I'm your host, Howard Weiner. My website, Tangled Up in Tunes. I'll be back with another show next week. I'm not sure exactly what it's going to be yet, but whatever it's going to be, it's got to be hot because it's the Grateful Dead. Peace out.